The presenting sponsor of Top Docs is Netflix, now presenting Beckham from Academy Award-winning director Fisher Stevens. The four-part docuseries follows David Beckham's meteoric rise from humble beginnings to global football stardom. The Telegraph calls it a superb, complex, and unexpected portrayal, and The Guardian adds that it strikes a rich and vibrant tone. Beckham is streaming now on Netflix.
Hi, I'm Ken Jacobson, and welcome to Top Docs. Today, we're talking to director Rob Reiner about his documentary, Albert Brooks, Defending My Life. Albert Brooks, Defending My Life, had its world premiere at the 2023 AFI Fest and is now available for streaming on Max. The legendary Academy Award-nominated Rob Reiner has directed such classic films as Stand By Me, The Princess Bride, When Harry Met Sally, A Few Good Men, The American President, and of course, his feature directorial debut, This Is Spinal Tap, which incidentally not only celebrates its 40th anniversary this year, but is soon to be joined by a sequel that Rob is now in post-production on. I was absolutely thrilled that Rob was able to take time out from editing the Spinal Tap sequel to talk to me. Besides being a writer, director, producer, and actor, he's also a lifelong friend of the comedian's comedian, the incredible Albert Brooks. They've been friends for over 60 years. They actually met when they were both in high school at Beverly Hills High, and after many years of hounding him, Albert finally agreed to let Rob make this documentary about him. I love how Rob shot the main interview in a restaurant. It immediately brought to mind one of my favorite films, My Dinner with Andre, and he really pays homage to that film here. We've done close to 200 of these podcasts, and when I was talking to Rob Reiner, I had the odd feeling that it was almost like I was in the documentary that we were talking about, in the sense that our conversation, to me, felt as relaxed and easygoing as the conversation between Albert and Rob that's depicted in the film. And while this is primarily a portrait of Albert Brooks and his career, it's also really a study in friendship. One thing I took from the documentary is what an incredibly good interviewer Rob is. And for me, his strength as an interviewer comes from being such a great listener. So now, sit back and enjoy listening to our conversation. As usual, if you like this interview, please follow us and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and do tell a friend. Also, please follow us on Instagram at TopDocsPod and on Twitter also at TopDocsPod. And now, my conversation with director Rob Reiner about his documentary, Albert Brooks, Defending My Life. Rob Reiner, welcome to Top Docs.
Thanks, Ken. Thanks for having me.
You bet. It's an honor and a privilege. I'm a huge fan of your work and of this film, Albert Brooks, Defending My Life. And I suppose you're here to defend your film, but not really. Just to enlighten us with the answers to a few questions.
Sure.
Let's go ahead and jump in. You know, in 1984, you directed, I believe it was your first directing credit, This Is Spinal Tap.
That's right.
Which for many people virtually defined the genre of the mockumentary. Although Albert Brooks, of course, takes a little bit of issue with that, with his own real life.
He does. In the documentary about him, he talks about real life having preceded This Is Spinal Tap by 5 years. Now, the difference was that it was about the making of the documentary, Albert's real life. It was not just the documentary, but also the making of it and how he got it funded and all that. This Is Spinal Tap was just supposedly a pure documentary. It was supposed to be a documentary of this legendary band. So it was not like we didn't show you how we made it, we just made it. So it was slightly different, but Albert certainly preceded it. And his was based on the Loud family, which
That's
was
right.
a very famous first reality show ever, when you think about it. I mean, this is back in the 70s. I mean, where the Loud family, they let a camera come in and take pictures and take films of this entire family. And now you see, a zillion years later, there's a million of these kind of reality shows. They're not real reality, to be honest.
They're manipulated reality.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Let's fast forward 40 years or so from 1984 and Spinal Tap to your new documentary, Albert Brooks, Defending My Life. And My first question is, why did it take you 40 years to make a quote unquote real documentary, Rob?
Well, you know, it's so funny because, you know, I don't think of myself as a, you know, a documentary filmmaker, and that's not something I ever pursued that all that much. But, you know, when My Dinner with Andre came out, I really liked it. And I thought, wow, you know, Albert and I have been friends, close friends, since we were high school kids together at age 16. And I said to Albert, I said, why don't we do something like that? Why don't we do My Lunch with Albert? And we'll sit at a deli and we'll film it for a couple of days and we'll just start talking to each other and see what comes out of it. And I actually said to him, if you don't like it, we'll just throw it away. I mean, it didn't cost very much. We'll just shoot it and throw it away. He never wanted to do it. He said, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do it. And that was over a period of 20 years. I kept asking him and he never wanted to do it. Finally, when somebody else approached him about doing a documentary about his life, and then that fell apart, and then I talked to him again about doing it, we've had this idea of melding those two ideas. The idea of me sitting down with Albert and talking, because we have this friendship, this relationship, and that being the centerpiece of a bigger documentary, which was about Albert's life and his career and all of the material and all the wonderful sketches and films that he's made over the years.
I think you meld these different elements really beautifully. And I would just say, you know, when I saw that opening scene, immediately it transported me back to My Dinner with Andre, which is a film I too love. And, you know, it came out in 1981. And for folks who don't know, stars Andre Gregory and Wallace Shawn. It really is just that conversation. And Right. Here it looks like you've proceeded to a later part of the meal. However, it's more like my dessert with Albert.
Yeah, we have a piece of cheesecake there in front of us, yeah, and some coffee.
I thought it was cheesecake, and it looks darn good, by the way. I wanted to ask you about your interview style, because I just loved, I wouldn't just describe it as your interview style, but your presence in the film. You know, the two of you, obviously you have this lifelong friendship, so things are very conversational and relaxed, but you're also curious and probing in the interview. And above all, you're just a great listener. When the camera's on you, you're clearly listening and you're following up with questions. And I wondered, was this interview, once you did bring in the cameras and everything, was it like just chatting with your old friend Albert, or did you have to prepare in different ways?
No. I mean, it was. I mean, I wanted to cover all the appearances that he did on television and his film work and his stand-up and the record albums that he made and the book that he wrote. I wanted to cover all of those things. And I obviously knew virtually everything that Albert's done, being as close as I am to him. So I had the notes of making sure I hit on those topics. But as far as just talking back and forth with him, that was very easy because it's something that Albert and I have been doing for years. I mean, that's why I wanted to initially do the My Lunch with Albert thing, because we do have this connection and we do talk back and forth. We shared a house together for over a year and we just hung out. We were always hanging out and we loved to go back and forth with each other. It's very easy to do. And to be honest, Albert is a genius. I mean, the man is as brilliant as any comedian I've ever met in my life, and I've met lots of them. I would put him and Mel Brooks as the two great, you know, oddly enough, you know, my dad's best friend was Mel Brooks, and here's another Reiner with another Brooks. It's funny. And neither of those people, by the way, are named Brooks. Mel is Mel Kaminsky, and Albert is, oddly enough, Albert Einstein, and we get into the weight of having to carry that name around with you all your life. We get into that in the film. But it's easy for me, and I look at Albert, like I say, as this genius, and I want to know what is in his head. When he starts to talk, and I've said this many times, that if there's a group of comedians, and really great, whether, well, you know, in the past was Robin Williams or Chevy Chase or Billy or any of the comedians, when they ever get together, and everybody's exchanging shtick and doing stuff. When Albert started to talk, that was it. I mean, everybody kind of stopped because he went to places that nobody would go to. And so for me, I'm listening to him because I want to hear what's going to come out of his head. I want to know, what is he going to say? And so it's pretty easy to be able to talk to him because I admire him so much.
I'm curious, you have this 60 plus year friendship, but is it the kind of friendship like many long-term friendships, you know, that where there are periods where you were closer or not as close due to various circumstances?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And no, we go in and out of the time together, you know, we're going through stuff in our lives and we'll reconnect and then drift apart and then come back again. But it's like with any friend that you love and know him for so long, you fall right back in, you know? I mean, it's like, you know, if time's gone by, it's as if no time has gone by. It's like you pick up right where you've left off. And then it's fun to find out, oh, I did that, or this happened to you or whatever. And now we're close. Obviously, the making the documentary brought us close, but we were close even before that. My wife, Michelle, during COVID, we decided to have a Zoom with friends. And Albert and Kimberly, who's his wife Kimberly, was on the Zoom. Billy Crystal and his wife Janice and Albert. We had Alan's wife Belle and Robin's wife Belle. Marty Short was part of the group, and also Barry Levinson and his wife Diana. And so with a bunch of us would get together every Friday and talk. Then we went one time to Palm Springs together as a group. I've been close to Albert, pretty close to him for the last many years.
I wish I could have been on some of those Zooms. Wow, what a group.
We're funny. Yeah. I mean, it kept us going during COVID. Yeah. We should have taped them. I could have used a lot of that stuff. We never did, though. We just kind of talked.
The next pandemic, you will.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Looking forward to that next pandemic.
There's so many coincidences. You mentioned the Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks connection and your connection with a different Brooks, Albert. The two of you went to the same high school, Beverly Hills High, where you met for the first time. Both of you had fathers who were comedians and mothers who were actresses and singers who then stopped performing to raise their families. This is covered in the film. A lot of this I wasn't aware of. Certainly I was familiar with your father, Carl Reiner, who is just a legend in the comedy and television world. And Albert's father, I didn't know, Harry Einstein, a.k.a. Harry Parke, a.k.a.
Archaeocarcus, yeah.
Archaeocarcus, yeah. He was less well known than your dad, but he was certainly a working actor and comedian in his own right. And as you cover in the film, he dies suddenly, tragically, and very publicly. People can watch the film and find out how that transpired. But it happened when Albert was
He was 11. He was 11.
11. Yeah. So quite young. And I was curious, getting back to your friendship, before this film, had you talked much with Albert about losing his father at age 11?
Oh, yeah. That's one of the first things you find out when you meet Albert and become friends. I mean, there's a big hole there where he's missing that part of his life. And what I did find out, I'm only maybe 5 months older than Albert or 4 months older than Albert. We're about the same. But I think there's a part of him that looks for a father. And now he did with my father. My father filled in a lot for him. But I think even a part of me does that for him. I don't know if he would say it, but I think there's a part of me that does that for him a little bit. I think you find that with somebody who loses a father early on. Billy Crystal also lost his father when he was 14. And I have a similar kind of thing with Billy that I do with Albert. We're close and everything, and we're supportive of each other. But there's that element missing that I think somebody will always look for, a father figure, an older brother, that kind of thing. And I think Albert has had that. What I found out during the documentary and subsequently is that he spent more time with my father than I realized.
Interesting.
He would go over there sometimes when I wasn't there and talk with my father, you know, and ask him for advice and things like that.
Wow, that is interesting. And it makes sense to me. There's the incredible story in the film about how your father appears on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. And he tells Johnny asks him, like, who's the best comedian working today or who's your favorite comedian? And your father cites a young Albert Brooks, who's only like, he's a teenager. He's like 16, 17 years old.
Yeah, 16 years old.
No one knows this person. And he's talking about him publicly on the biggest show on, you know, interview show on television. And I was just thinking, not just what that must have meant to Albert, which you talk about in the film, but thinking about some of the reasons why your father may have done that. And it made me think, because he was a kind of father figure to Albert, and that he wanted to encourage him and show him support by doing that.
I think that's true. But I also believe that it came out of a very pure place of Albert legitimately making my father scream with laughter. As like we mentioned in the film, Albert at age 16 had the ability to make seasoned, sophisticated professional comedians laugh. I mean, he was a prodigy. Nobody could do that. I remember, we talk about a bit that he did one time at my house when I was 16, and he did this Houdini bit, which is, he was the worst escape artist in the history of the world. But my dad was screaming with laughter. And I think that it came as a legitimate phrase, not just the fact that he felt like a father figure, but he also was legitimately impressed with Albert.
A big theme of the film is Albert's genius and his true originality as a comedian. And I wanted to ask about his approach to comedy in relation to the older generation of comedians represented by your father and his father's generation. And I was just thinking, you know, in some ways, maybe there was a thought process that if you can't beat them, do something completely different.
I don't know that Albert approached it that way. Albert is mentioned in the film. Jon Stewart talks about this alternative comic, this meta comic, who basically took the world that he was raised in, the show business world, and found ways of making fun of it in these conceptual pieces that he did. He was the ventriloquist who never had his mouth stop moving when he was doing his ventriloquism. When he was a mime in black leotard and white face, he never stopped talking. When he was an elephant trader, the elephant didn't show up. He was the worst pickpocket in the world. He did these making fun of show business acts, but found a way to do it that nobody could think of. And he did it, like I say in the documentary, he did it for the first time on national television. He never tried these bits out. He didn't go to a comedy club and say, let's see how this works. He would go right directly on national television with a bit that he thought was funny. And sometimes they worked, sometimes they didn't, but they were always funny. And sometimes he would do something that was funny that didn't work the first time and then came back and did it again. And then it would work just because the audience finally picked up on what he was doing.
Did you ever, not necessarily in the making of this film, but prior to that, talk about him, about his creative practice, just like what he goes through in coming up with these bits, how his brain works?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's impossible to explain how Albert's brain works. I didn't mention this in the documentary, but we were driving one time up in the hills above Malibu, you know, where the ocean is, and we got lost. We couldn't figure out a way to get back down to the Pacific Coast Highway, which is what we need to get to. And we were lost up in these hills. And there was a field, a pasture, and there was a cow that was grazing by itself. And Albert was driving. He pulls the car up to the cow and he goes, "Sir," and the cow is eating grass. And he goes, "Sir," and the cow looks up and the cow looks at Albert, and Albert says, "Excuse me, do you know how to get to the PCH?" And the cow flips his head back like he was flicking a fly away and like pointing in a direction. And Albert says, "Thank you." And he drives off. And I said, "Albert, you just took directions from a cow." And he says, "Yeah, but, you know, he lives around here. Knows this area." And that's the way Albert, his mind works like that. And it comes out of nowhere. It just comes out of nowhere. One of the things that was a struggle for me was to find a way to communicate in the documentary just how brilliant Albert is, because the most brilliant things that he does comes out extemporaneously and comes out of the ether. And unless you're there and it happens to happen, you know, but we're shooting it, you know, I'm sitting with him at a table. He knows the camera's on. And it's always slightly different when you know the camera's on as opposed to when you don't think it's on. But it's still brilliant. You'll look at some of the things he says in the documentary. I mean, he's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant.
Something that's in the film that's maybe sort of in between those two spaces are the films that Steven Spielberg shot on the cuff, riding around in a car with Albert in the, probably, I guess, the late 70s, mid to late 70s.
Yeah, in the 70s, yeah.
That was a revelation to me. And just the picture of that, this brilliant comedian and now legendary filmmaker driving around in a car and Albert sticking his head out the window and doing bits with these drivers next to them.
Well, Stephen, he used to, you know, they were close. And Albert, just like anytime, he'd start doing shtick around Stephen and Stephen would laugh. And then he said, I want to film that. So Stephen, his instinct is to film anything that's original. And so he went around and started filming Albert.
So you do have a lot of great interviews in the film with comedians, actors. There's one with Spielberg. How did you cull the universe and come up with the folks to be in the film? What was sort of your criteria?
Well, a lot of the people that have worked with Albert, some people that Albert's been on their show, like Letterman. He knows Conan, he knows Spielberg, Larry David, you know, he was on that show. I mean, a lot of people he knows. And then I wanted to get comedians who, you know, he may not have worked with, but just to hear their take on him. People who I respect, Wanda Sykes and Chris Rock, Nikki Glaser, Anthony Jeselnik, Jon Stewart, and Judd Apatow, who Albert worked with and talks about him. And of course, Jim Brooks, who Albert has worked with. So most of the people Albert's worked with, but I also wanted to hear what other comedians thought of him. And like I say, they all look up to him. They're all kind of intimidated by him. And they talk about meeting Albert and being in awe. You know, Larry David talks about, he says, well, he liked me, you know, or Judd Apatow talks about having dinner with him and Gary Shandling and then coming home and writing down everything Albert said. It's that kind of reverence that everybody has for Albert. And I always knew that. I knew that from every time I was in a party situation with Albert. Everybody always said, oh, he's the one. That's the guy. He's the guy.
I think his appeal, too, it's partly his originality, of course, but it's also his honesty and his willingness to kind of probe his own life and his own soul for universal truths. And that takes me to Mothers. So his own mother and his movie Mother from 1996, which is an incredible film, an uncomfortable film, a hilarious film, and a very honest one. I'm curious, since you knew his mother, did you and Albert talk about this script when he was writing it? Did you know he was about to do this?
No, I knew he was doing it. Yeah. And I knew that he initially, oddly enough, approached Nancy Reagan to play that part. And she actually read with him and she was considering, but then she said, I don't know if I can do it. And then, he wound up doing it with Debbie Reynolds. And I knew he was doing it. And I knew, like you say, he's an honest guy. He's going to take from his own life. That's what he does. And I knew his mother. His mother was a terrific woman, but she was tough. She was tough. And she, you know, we have it in the film. He would go on Carson and he would kill and he would be brilliant. And she would call him up and would say to him, well, what did Johnny think? You know, it was never like, Albert, you were great. You know, it was always, what did Johnny think? And he makes the joke. He says, that was going to be my autobiography. It's going to be called, What Did Johnny Think? So, yeah, I knew that he had those issues with his mother. And I think that the fact that we're friends and that we're close, I think he felt comfortable talking to me and saying some things that he might not have said with other people. I mean, he was very forthcoming about his relationship with his mother and his father and how he always knew his father might die one day because his father was sick when he was growing up and that he didn't want to get too close because he didn't want his father to be taken away from him and all that stuff. That stuff, I don't know that he would have talked about that with other people.
I really got that feeling as well, just as a viewer. I think you're the one person who could have made this film, you know. And it's funny because I think there's a little bit of a tell when you're asking about his mother, in which it's, I think, the only moment in the film where he kind of adjusts the plate in front of him and the water glass. And I'm like, is he actually a little nervous here talking about his mother? It just was a really small moment, but a bit of a tell.
Well, it's true. It's absolutely true. And at one point I said, well, let's, you know, we talked about your father. Let's talk about your relationship with your mother. And he says, just look at mother. And he'll tell you everything you need to know. And there are some very honest moments that are reflected in things that he had with his real mother. And the last thing, you know, we have it in the film, but the last thing that she said to him when she was about to go, she looked up at him and she said, you look like you lost a little weight. And his brother, Bob, who's there, says, I told her she always thought you were fat. In that high, squeaky voice. That was a thing that always, and I remember times that I was over at Albert's house and he and his mother would get into big fights. They would be screaming at each other and she was going to take the car away and, you know, she was going to, you know.
And this was when he was in his 30s.
Yeah, right. No, this was, you know, when he was a kid, when he was a teenager.
So Albert's movies, he's directed some really amazing films, some great comedies. I guess today we would call them instant classics. As someone yourself who started directing movies about 5 years after Albert's first feature came out, what did you learn about directing and movie making from watching Albert's movies and maybe talking to him about directing?
Well, we never talked about directing. We never did. Like I said, his first film is about a documentary and it's totally scripted. It's a scripted film. Everything in there, it's not improvised. It's scripted. And Spinal Tap, it's completely improvised. I mean, we had a five-page outline. We knew the tour that they were going to be on. We knew certain scenes were what that scene, this is going to happen, that. But all the dialogue is completely improvised. It's not something that I would have talked to Albert about because that's the world I came out of. I had my own improvisation group. I was with the committee, which was an improvisation group that spoke off a Second City, and they were in San Francisco. I was with that troupe down in Los Angeles. So that was my world. I was steeped in that world. And so when I went to make the first film, it felt comfortable to me. It wasn't something I needed to go and talk. I mean, I couldn't even talk to my father about that because he didn't make any improvised films that there's no script. It's an odd process. It's a very odd process. So no, Albert and I never got into any of that kind of stuff.
Interesting. Did you, in watching his films, did you take things from them that kind of you filed away or just for your own directing?
No, but I got to say that they're in every one of his films. I mean, whether it's Real Life or Lost in America or Modern Romance, Defending Your Life, the last one, Looking for Comedy in the Muslim World, there are moments that are so damn brilliant in every one of them. And to me, it's like a gift that you get to watch these films and see these things. I always look forward to it. It wasn't like I would take something from it. Everything's in the atmosphere. But I can be honest and say that when I'm making a film and making, particularly comedy, Albert's voice would be in the back of my head. I would say, Albert like this? Is this something, you know, or would he think I'm an idiot for doing this, you know? There are certain people that you put kind of in the back of your head that you want to see if they'll like this. And that's kind of a barometer you have built in.
What would Albert think?
Yeah.
Speaking of that, I'm wondering what Albert Brooks said after seeing your documentary for the first time. I'm going to guess that A, he had a funny line, and B, he said something insightful and reflective and poignant, perhaps. Maybe all that's wrong, but what did Albert say when he first showed him the film?
Well, here's what's interesting. When we finished the film, I was going to screen it for just a group of people. And I said, Albert, come over. We'll watch the film. And he said, no, I can't do that. I can't do that. I'll tell you what. I said, we're going to have a dinner after. He said, maybe I'll come over for dinner afterwards. But you have to let me know if they like the films. If they don't like the film, oh, we go work for dinner. So then we watch the film, it's finished. And then I call Albert up, said, you can come over. He says, I'll be right there. And he was there like 2 minutes. He must have been driving around the block or something. And then we never watched it until recently. because when we were first going to screen it, the strike was on and we couldn't go because we couldn't promote or do anything. And just recently, within the last couple of weeks, we screened it at the Academy and we had a Q&A at the afterwards, and Judd Apatow conducted the Q&A, and I was sitting in the back with Albert, and he was just loving it. I mean, I loved it too, because it's the first time I saw it with a real audience, and they were laughing, and there was like, it was the weirdest kind of thing of watching a documentary. It played 100% like a film. It didn't play like a documentary because it had a central character, which was Albert. It had emotional stuff of what he went through with his father and his mother and finding Kimberly and having his children. And it had an arc of a career. There was a beginning, middle, and end. There were big laughs. Most documentaries, even about comedians, there are not that many laughs because usually the filmmaker will show a tiny little clip of something and out of context, those things are not funny. We tried to show big chunks of Albert's stuff so that you could really get a sense of how brilliant he was. And so we watched this thing and it was like, wow, this is like a movie. We're watching a movie. And what a thrill to watch a movie, particularly a comedy, with a group of people that are laughing like crazy.
I really did appreciate those longer chunks of his appearances on various shows and from his movies. Not only do you appreciate what he's doing, but you're in the moment and you're laughing. So that really worked beautifully. And
the whole idea of defending your life. The name of the film is Defending My Life. And Albert, because he's such an original, because he's so unique, and some people have a tough time getting all of this stuff, he has to be defending his life. All the way through, he's always doing that. To me, that is his best film, Defending My Life. And it mirrors that in a way. When we were talking in the restaurant, he was telling me about this guy that said, well, I don't understand. Why do you always pick the hard road? Why do you always pick the difficult road? And he said, you don't understand. You think I see two roads. And he goes upon this thing and he says, I only see one road. And that's his vision. And when he said that, he said, I only see one road. I actually said to him while we were sitting, I said, that's the end of the movie. And we wound up that, it segues into the end of the movie.
And I think that's the end of our interview. You've done it again. You've created a perfect narrative arc. I would just say, just as Albert is a true original, so are you, Rob Reiner. I have loved your work from All in the Family days through all of your acting performances, your directing, your movies. You've produced a number of things. I just think you've really enriched the culture and all of our lives. So, and now you're making brilliant documentaries, so you have to promise not to wait another 40 years for the next one.
Thank you so much, Ken. Thank you for having me.
Top Docs is a production of Woolly Media. This episode was produced by Ken Jacobson and Mike Merrill and edited by Mike.